NPR News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire Governor Maggie Hassan settled into the corner office on January 3, 2013. In her inaugural address, the new governor promised to be a bipartisan chief executive in the mold of John Lynch, her popular predecessor.
The people of New Hampshire have made it clear that they want to restore balance, that they want us to work together. Let us promise ourselves today that we will meet our challenges by focusing on common sense solutions born of collaboration. That we will together end the era of hasty, reactive government.
This afternoon, as Governor Hassan delivers her first State of the State address, she's expected to look back at how some of those challenges were met and which remain. These will likely include the stalemate she faces over Medicaid expansion, the difficulty she's had in getting expanded gambling passed, and continuing uncertainty about how she and her transportation chief plan to fund infrastructure. Today in The Exchange, taking stock of Governor Hassan's first year, let's hear from you. Where do you think this new governor has done well over the past 12 months, and when do you think she's missed the mark? What priorities do you hope she focuses on next over the coming year? Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. With me in studio, Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website, nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, nice to see you. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Zandra Rice Hawkins, founding executive director of Granite State Progress, a progressive advocacy organization. And Zandra, good to see you. Thank you for your time.
Glad to be here.
Also with us, Drew Klein, editorial page editor for the Union Leader and New Hampshire Sunday News. And Drew, good to see you. Welcome back.
Thanks.
Well, all of you, I want to start with just your broad thoughts on Maggie Hassan, and then we'll get into some of the specifics, as I said. Dean Spiliotis, what were the expectations a year ago about how Maggie Hassan would govern her style as the state's chief executive?
Yeah, well, whenever I assess a chief executive, whether we're talking about a governor or a president, I typically look at the performance in terms of the multiple roles that the individual is expected to play in office. So, you know, you can break her performance down into a number of different criteria. So, for example, how well did she meet her policy objectives that she set during the campaign? How good has she been at crisis management? How well is she working with the legislature? Is she meeting public expectations for her leadership? You know, by all objective indicators, there's some new data out from UNH showing, you know, she's a majority of New Hampshire residents approve. She's about 51%. About 64% of New Hampshire, I'd say, were on the right track as a state. So, you know, generally, you know, she's done reasonably well for a first term. You know, my kind of, you know, thumbnail on how she's done is that, you know, although I don't think she has met some of the key policy objectives that she set during her campaign, she has done a good job at understanding the constraint of having a Republican Senate in the legislature and the constraints on the institution as it's defined in New Hampshire. It's not one of the strongest governorships in the country from an institutional perspective. So I think in part because of all her political career in the legislature, her experience as a politician, you know, she may not be meeting all of her objectives, but she has done a good job at working within the constraints that she faces as governor. And, you know, whenever you meet those constraints, there's an opportunity for conflict. There's an opportunity for compromise. And my sense from talking to people in both parties is that she's done a reasonably good job at sort of that particular balancing act.
You know, just real quick, Dean, you mentioned the constraints of the New Hampshire governor's office itself, no matter who is sitting in there. Just remind us why this is considered a particularly weak governorship here in New Hampshire.
Well, I mean, there are a number of different reasons. You know, we can point to it. There's a two-year term, which really affects the dynamic of the political process or sort of the legislative policy cycle in the state. There are very few states that have a two-year term. You have the executive council. So you essentially have these five individuals who are constantly looking over your shoulder. They have a say on your contracts. They have a say on your department heads. They have a say on your court appointments. You have a very large House of Representatives and a very small Senate, you know, 400 in the one case. 24 in the other. Those both present unusual constraints for a governor. So, I think there's a lot any individual can do in terms of public leadership, symbolism, even policy objectives. But it's not viewed as one of the stronger governorships in the country, just from a definitional perspective.
So Xander Rice-Hawkins, Governor Hassan comes in. There was some talk on the left that she might be more liberal than John Lynch, her predecessor. What were your own hopes and expectations for Governor Hassan and for her administration when she first came in?
Well, I think the biggest job she had was to restore common sense and balance to the state house. We saw really a lot of dissatisfaction across the state with the policies of the 2011-2012 legislature. And that really wasn't about Governor Lynch. That was really about the super conservative super majorities that we had in the House and Senate. And I think one of the commitments that Maggie Hassan made in her campaign was that she would restore some fiscal and social sanity to that corner office and really help guide New Hampshire back, restore services that had been cut drastically during the 2011-2012 legislature. One of the things from our perspective that we were really hopeful for, and I think that Governor Hassan has delivered on, is that we were really looking for somebody who would not only help guide New Hampshire, but who would really be an active partner in helping create solutions. And certainly that's something Governor Lynch did, but I think that Maggie Hassan's particular take on it is that she comes to this work from being an advocate. Her first foray into public service was really as a mother serving on some educational commissions, and she's really brought that kind of spirit and that background with her. And I think when you hear her talk about Medicaid expansion, she knows what it means for families not to have health care or to struggle to make sure that the people in their family are covered. I think when she talks about making sure we have adequate education, and particularly her emphasis on tying our future economy to making sure we have strong investment in higher education, really speaks to her experience as an individual and what she brings to her office.
Drew, what do you think? What were your expectations at the outset about how Maggie Hassan would govern? We knew her a little bit because she'd been a state senator for a while and active in politics.
I think a lot of conservatives and a lot of people who just watch state government had this expectation that because she had been in the Senate and she had been pretty effective as a state senator, that she would come in and really know how to work the system and be a very effective governor at getting her agenda done. And the opposite happened. It was a big surprise. I look at executives. My gold standard for chief executives in government is James K. Polk. He came in. He had five goals as president, and he got every one of them accomplished in one term and left.
Wow.
And so that's sort of my gold standard. If you can do that, if you can even come close to that, if you have a list of goals, you accomplish them, you know, that's what you're supposed to be doing. Maggie Hassan had four goals coming in as governor. She wanted to expand gambling, get a casino. She wanted to expand Medicaid. She wanted to restore fully all of the USNH cuts. And she wanted to undo the so-called Bill O'Brien, Republican budgets of the last session. She failed at every one of them. And she didn't fail at them because the governor is a weak governor in New Hampshire. She failed at them because her leadership style, when she actually got on the ground, was very different than the leadership style that she presented in her inaugural address. It was very partisan. It was very aggressively hostile to the Republicans. And I can get into some more of the details of that later. But she kind of tried to govern the way Obama governs. She attacked the other side, pushed the other side away, and even went around the state campaigning in districts of state senators, of Republican senators, in a way to try to get them to vote for her, and it all failed. And so I think it was a first year that she learned a lot of lessons, and we're going to have to see how she adjusts going into the second year.
Yeah. Dean Spiliotis, what do you think about that? Despite all the bipartisan talk, Republicans have said that Maggie Hassan is a more partisan governor than John Lynch was.
Well, it's interesting because, Drew may very well be correct. And the reality may be that she, particularly for people like us who follow state legislative politics and gubernatorial politics closely, it may look that way. But I think what has worked well for her is I don't think that's the sort of the general public perception of her. I think that, for example, we'll talk about the budget that passed on this unanimous vote. You know, that people seem to be happy with that. There was sort of presented as this sort of great bipartisan moment, and she got a little bit of a bump in her approval rating as a result. But, you know, many conservatives have argued that budget was really a function of, Chuck Morris and Jeb Bradley and Peter Bragdon and other Republicans in the Senate holding their ground, that essentially, you know, it was the O'Brien budget with a much nicer gloss on it. So, you know, that may be the case that sort of down in the trenches, there have been moments where, you know, we had this conflictual moment with Peter Bragdon at one point where the two of them exchanged words through the media. But I think what has worked well for her, and I think part of it is a function of Drew's comments, but part of it I do think is a function of the institution, is it has not resonated that way in the public. I always get a sense when a governor or chief executive is kind of generally resonating as a highly partisan figure, and for whatever conservatives feel about that, and whether or not that's the reality, that has not permeated the general public consciousness. And in terms of her electoral chances, that's a very good thing.
And I would agree with that. It hasn't. Her perception in the public is different than the way insiders in Concord perceive.
Right.
Yeah, voters perceive Governor Hassan different than perhaps us sitting here in studio and people who watch very closely. So I'm interested, Zandra, and to you too, Drew. But Zandra, you first. Drew said that on the four big issues that Maggie Hassan wanted to succeed on, he says she failed. How would you grade Governor Hassan's first year? A, B, C?
Oh, I think she gets an A. And I think if you look at the four areas that Drew mentioned, restoring cuts from the O'Brien budget, Medicaid expansion, UNH funding, and gambling, there's clear movement or progress on each of those areas. So they restored some of the critical health services that have been cut under the O'Brien era, and that was something that the governor, because of her experience as a state senator in building and forming coalitions and moving legislation, was able to do, even though that there's a divided chamber with Republicans in control of the Senate and obviously Dems in control of the House. If you look at Medicaid expansion, that's an issue that across the country has been something that's highly debated in states. And you do see in a lot of states, particularly those with Republican governors, where they've looked to see what needed to happen and they've moved forward. And I think the struggle here is that the Senate Republicans in New Hampshire really need to be pushed a little farther on that.
More conversation about Governor Hassan's first year coming up. And we'll start taking your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. NHPR reaches listeners all over New Hampshire. If you own or operate a business, you can get your message to the entire state by simply becoming an NHPR underwriter. Visit the support page at nhpr.org to find out more about our many underwriting opportunities. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from the Monshire Museum of Science in Norwich, Vermont, presenting Sustainable Shelter, a new exhibition exploring innovative home building technologies and systems, daily 10 to 5, monshire.org. From the University of New Hampshire, offering a 2-day executive development program to build leadership skills and drive innovation, program begins March 25th. More at execed.unh.edu. I'm from the New Hampshire Union Leader and newhampshire.com, opening up the stories, events, and resources essential to living in the Granite State. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at Governor Hassan's first year in office and some of the issues that have come up over that time. One of the major agenda items Hassan promoted was casino gambling to bring in more revenue for the state. Here she is talking about that in her budget address early last year.
To fund our most pressing priorities, especially higher education and mental health, my budget includes $80 million from licensing one high-end, highly regulated casino.
And of course, that casino did not come through. We're talking about that and other issues that have come up over Governor Hassan's first year. We'd like to hear from you, too. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And Zandra Rice Hawkins, I did want to let you follow up on that, as well as you, Drew Klein. The casino issue. Drew mentioned that that's yet another area where Governor Hassan pushed and didn't make it.
Well, our organization doesn't have a position on this, but I would say looking at this issue, This is a highly debated issue in New Hampshire, and this isn't a partisan issue by any means. You have Democrats and Republicans on either side of this. And so when you look at Governor Hassan's particular take on it and what she's working towards, there is actually activity at the State House today based off of a commission that's been looking at this. They've gone through the process of studying it. By news accounts, there's additional legislators who were opposed to it before who are supporting it now. So I think this debate is open in New Hampshire and remains to be seen.
Here's an email from Christopher on this point. He says, Governor Hassan seems to be hitching her wagon to a casino star. How does the liberal wing of the Democratic Party feel about her unrelenting support of this method of raising revenue in New Hampshire? Zandra, and maybe you, Dean?
Again, our organization doesn't have a position on it, but I don't think that this is a partisan issue. This really it splits all over the place, and I think you saw that when you look at the House and you look at the votes out of there, it wasn't Democrats, Republicans.
Dean, your thoughts?
Yeah, we've talked about this before on the Friday News Roundup. You know, this gambling issue and the positions that the various representatives and senators have on it, for a number of those folks, it's sort of fairly set in stone. You know, one of the things we've tried to gauge over the last year is, you know, was the defeat of gambling in the House a function of these sort of deeply held beliefs or principles about whether or not gambling is good for the state? Or are there things that could have been done in terms of the regulatory framework and other issues to sort of make it more palatable to Democrats? And, you know, we now have these sort of, you know, competing the bill in the Senate for the two casinos that's going to be put on hold until they see what happens in the House bill. And then we just had this, I think it was 100 representatives who came out of support of the House bill. But I'm still unconvinced that this is simply about getting the regulatory framework in order. I do think a lot of this are sort of deeply held beliefs. I think I mentioned once, I've lived now in two states over the last 25 years. Both states were pushing for gambling. It's the same argument, the same divisions year after year, decade after decade. I'm not sure that anything is going to be different this time around, perhaps, but perhaps not. But, you know, she has made more progress on the issue than other governors. And I don't know if she gets the credit for that or if it's just simply that people's attitudes are changing the same way they're changing on gay marriage or marijuana, et cetera. So we'll see. But I'm not convinced that this year is going to be all that different from last year, because I don't know whether this is a function of regulatory issues or a function of deeply held principles.
Well, thanks for that email, Christopher. Again, the address is exchange@nhpr.org. The phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Drew Klein, a couple minutes ago, I asked Zandra her grade for the governor. She gave Governor Hassan an A for the first year. How about you?
I don't know if I want to give a letter grade. I mean, I think that's sort of kind of it's 1 year. So maybe at the end of her second year, we can give a letter grade. I think she's done some things fairly well in terms of, you know, the tone she wanted to present to the voters, the persona that she's representing. She does come across in sort of the broad brush as moderate, as someone who's, you know, generally competent. But in her legislative push, and this is where I think she's got some real issues and she didn't learn from last year's mistakes, this year is going to be a rough year for her too. You know, she got off to a bad start last year in May when the Senate Finance Committee released its budget, and she released this press release that said it devastating cuts to HHS. It's going to really hurt New Hampshire. And she listed four specific areas where the Senate Finance Committee budget would specific things in HHS that it cut. But immediately I noticed, and a lot of others did, that HHS budget in that bill actually increased. I mean, the Senate increased the spending in HHS from $1.96 million to $2.07 billion. Every one of the four instances, or specific areas she mentioned, the Senate actually increased. And this sort of set a really bad tone in the legislature, because right off the bat, the Senate can go, she's not telling the truth. I mean, look at the numbers. The numbers are not what she says they are. And it put the House in a bad position, too, because some of the spending that she said was deep cuts was precisely the same number as in the House budget. So it sort of messed up her start there to the legislative process. And throughout that, when you looked at gambling, when you looked at budget, you looked at other issues, she made numerous missteps in actually managing and trying to manage the legislative process. And gambling,
which is surprising, given that she was a state senator,
exactly.
Drew, is that what you're saying?
Right. I mean, you thought that she would be good at this. And so in this sort of granular political level that a lot of people outside of us political geeks don't know, she was very ineffective in a very surprising way. I mean, she actually, in the gambling, another example, she put $80 million from a casino in her budget. And when you actually talk to the legislative leaders in the House who were pushing this budget through and trying to hold hearings and figure it out, gambling failed in the House in large part because of the way she presented it. They were very upset that she put this money in her budget when the numbers showed, and you had House committee chairman saying this, that the numbers aren't there. Even if we get everything she wanted, the numbers will not be there. It takes a year or two or three or four for the gambling revenue to come in, so it's not going to be there. So we have to scrap this part of her budget and start over. So there were numerous instances where she presented something as being true when it wasn't, and it really set a bad tone, and it made it harder for her to get her agenda through.
Again, our phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like. It's NHPR Exchange. Today on the exchange, we're taking stock of Governor Hassan's first year as we prepare to hear her State of the State address later today at 2 o'clock. And of course, you can hear that on NHPR and nhpr.org. Right now, though, we'd like your thoughts about the governor's first year, where you think she's done well, where you feel she hasn't. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Bill's calling from Concord. Hi, Bill. You're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, hi. I like the governor, and aside from the politics, I wanted to say that personally, I think that she's very devoted to the people of New Hampshire, and in this case, I'm talking about the lobster industry. When the governor of Maine sent out free lobster express mail to governors of all the other states, 49 of them. And she took hers in defense of the lobster industry in New Hampshire and had it sent to the friendly kitchen, the homeless kitchen.
So a nice gesture.
In Concord, New Hampshire. And I thought that was very good. I think her heart is in the right place, and I'm all for her.
Okay.
Thanks
a lot, Bill, for the call. You know, this gets to what we were talking about earlier, Dean Spiliotis. Political types can, you know, say yay or nay, but the general public, you know, gets a sense of a governor in terms of how he or she acts. I think you and I talked once about Governor Lynch wore the raincoat very well, or the windbreaker well.
Right. No, I always say that governors have to be able to wear the windbreaker, particularly in times of crisis and natural disasters. You know, as I mentioned in my opening comments, you know, for whatever shortcomings she has had in terms of achieving specific policy objectives in the legislature, she's done a good job, as did John. I mean, John Lynch, in a sense, was a master at it, which is why his approval was so high, even though I always heard from conservatives that he was kind of reactive and not really engaging the policy process. You know, she has done a good job at shaping public expectations for leadership. There is this kind of almost symbolic role as a leader of the state in the same way that the president serves as the leader of the country. And I think, as Drew mentioned, she has at least been able to kind of present herself as kind of a moderate, as kind of focused on the needs of the people in New Hampshire. We had the great example that you and I talked about a few weeks ago with the Fred Fuller oil crisis, where, you know, they had a hotline up and running, and she was there in the crisis center, and, you know, I mean, she was ready to go. And there have been a number of storms where she's out riding with the plows, and you got to do that kind of stuff to be a successful governor. So I think there is a sense that, you know, she is committed to the state, you know, from a personal level. I think she clearly loves the job. I think that's evident for whatever difficulties she might have to deal with. And I think people sort of feel that, which is why you've got this, you know, 64% of people saying that the state's on the right track, which is a good number for a governor going into reelection.
Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Bill, thanks for that story. The number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like. It's NHPR Exchange. That's all one word. We want your thoughts, assessments of Governor Hassan's first year as we get ready to hear her State of the State address. Here's an email that came in earlier from Ron in Bow. He says, overall, I believe Governor Hassan's doing a fine job. Ron says, that said, I'm befuddled by her simultaneous support for expanded gambling and steadfast opposition to marijuana legalization. From a public health standpoint, that position is completely backwards. Ron says, may she review, reflect, and reconsider. Xander Rice Hawkins, I don't know if your group, Granite State Progress, takes a position on this issue, but clearly there are a lot of people who feel very strongly about the governor's position against legalizing marijuana, and some on the medical marijuana front who are upset that she made sure the bill didn't have a homegrown option.
I think this speaks to with compromise, because there are a lot of opinions here in New Hampshire around this issue, and I think that the governor has to walk a fine line between law enforcement, which is very concerned about the proliferation of pot and people's access to it, as well as substance abuse providers and advocates who've been concerned with that. On the other hand, you do have a growing group of people in the community who do want to see this happen. So I think the governor struck a balance with where she's at right now. Medicinal marijuana is something that does have widespread support in New Hampshire and in various parts of the country. And I think that moving forward in that direction is a balance here. I do think that legalization of marijuana in general is something the governor said that she's not supportive of, and I don't expect that to change this year.
Okay, Ron, thanks for the email. Again, the email address is exchange@nhpr.org. To you, Drew, and then Xandra and Dean. Drew, again, you're coming at this from a more conservative viewpoint. You said the governor, you know, had four agenda items. She failed on all of them. Where do you think she has done well? Where have you been pleased with her from a policy perspective? Never mind the sort of she presents a nice image and as a nice person.
Right. Well, I think she has there's one area where I think she could do a lot if she really pushed it hard. And she pushed it a little bit last year, and she hasn't done much this year, and that's on business taxes and tax reform. She got through, and this was one of her agenda items from the beginning, was the research and development tax credit. She got that through. Sailed through the bipartisan majorities. She had another proposal. It was part of her innovation plan for increasing this deduction for small businesses from the business one of the business taxes. She got that through. So there are things like that that I think she could find common ground on, and it's one of those areas where she's not been out front in striking a sort of a strident tone and attacking Republicans as extremists. And interestingly, you know, in her inaugural address, she talked about innovation a ton. It was the buzzword.
That was the theme.
Yeah. And it's supposed to be the buzzword of her whole administration. And it sort of got lost in all of the budget fight and then the gambling fight. And I think it's a missed opportunity for her. If she were to come back, obviously her speech is already written for today. But if she were to come back and say, you know, here's what we're going to focus on. We have these business tax reforms to get through. And we're going to make New Hampshire more competitive by lowering rates, by finding areas where we can make our climate more competitive in the Northeast, she would have no problem getting that through. And she could really lead on that, and it would be a feather in her cap come the next election. But I haven't seen her really take that and run with it as a top priority. And I think a lot of people in the business community in Hampshire are disappointed about that.
So are you saying that you have heard perhaps an opening?
Well, I think just watching last session, there was definitely an opening to it. I mean, the Senate was not going to oppose, you know, business tax cuts if they were done right. And I think a lot of Democrats in the House would be open to that, too, as long as it wasn't. I mean, their concern is revenue loss. So if you do it in a way that you can present it as not losing revenue, but improving the business climate, I think that would be something she could really have a really good accomplishment on. You know, there are some tax issues that are coming up, like the gas tax, which she has not taken a position on. And it's a little curious. I mean, she's following some of the Lynch playbook here and taking some of these controversial issues and just being totally silent on them until later. And I think actually if she had done that last session, she probably would have had a little more success.
You know, speaking of taxes, we talked to Governor Hassan last March and talked about a lot of things, of course, but she gave us her thoughts on an ideological tax battle over a new law that passed under the Republican legislature a couple years ago that allows business tax credits to go toward a scholarship fund, money which could go to private schools. This is a small amount of money, but it's been a big ideological battle. Let's hear what Governor Hassan said about that.
I think at a time when our public school funding is deeply strained and we're working on funding public charter schools in an appropriate way because there's a lot of charter school activity happening at the local level, very organic and very exciting, I think it makes much more sense to focus on adequately funding our local public schools and our charter schools rather than giving tax credits to private and religious institutions with absolutely no accountability.
So, Dean Spiliotis, there you have. And as I said, as I understand, this is not a lot of money, but it has attracted a lot of attention.
Right. We have talked about that issue on and off in recent months. You know, her position for me on that issue is not surprising. That's sort of where I would expect her to be as a Democrat. A couple reactions to the conversation here. You know, I think we need to give her credit for kind of pushing for changes in mental health, getting the state back on – trying to get the state back on schedule with this 10-year plan and opening up some additional hospital beds and kind of bringing greater visibility to the issue. And, you know, we've had some of these high-profile assaults or medical emergencies in emergency rooms. And so this issue has kind of come to a head in some respects. Medical marijuana, you know, it's a fairly narrow version of the bill, but she signed that. And I agree with Drew that, you know, she does look through these issues often through the lens of kind of business investment and R&D. And I think there are opportunities for her there. The one thing I wanted to mention, it was interesting. Drew used the word curious to describe her position on transportation. And I have something very similar written in my notes because I remember back to her initial speeches when she first came into office, the budget address, et cetera, and she sort of did not take a position. She took a position on many things, but she did not take a position on transportation, gas tax. And whenever you ask her about that, she said, well, I'm open to suggestions from
the
legislature. Yeah, I've been trying for, you know, since she became a candidate to get her to take a position on it. And it is curious that on this particular issue she has held off because, as we know, her own department head is saying that, you know, we're headed for a sort of a transportation Armageddon.
Although he says he's revenue agnostic too. He won't stake a position. I mean, right. Almost, but not
quite. They're painting a pretty grim picture of the transportation infrastructure. And this is one of the areas where, you know, at some point she's going to kind of have to take a stand on it. But, you know, I think mental health, medical marijuana, some of the R&D stuff are you know, things that have worked for her.
All right. And after a break, Xander Rice-Hawkins, I want your thoughts too. Drew Klein mentioned some of the areas where he was pleased with the governor or at least saw an opening for some progress. I'd like your thoughts after the break on where progressive groups like yours would have liked the governor to push harder. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. We'll take more of your calls to 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Join us with your own thoughts about Governor Hassan's first term as we prepare for the State of the State address. You can send us an email to exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. Good morning. It's 9:39.
Later today, Governor Maggie Hassan takes stock of her first year in office and lays out her plans for year two with her State of the State address. This is Laura Canoy. Join me and NHPR senior political reporter Josh Rogers for live coverage of the address. We'll hear the governor's remarks, reaction to the speech from lawmakers on both sides of the aisle, and what voters are saying on social media. State of the State address coverage begins today at 2 p.m. on NHPR and NHPR.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Bedford Falls Assisted Living, inviting caregivers to its next book club meeting, Saturday, February 8th from 1:30 to 3. Copy of the book, The Alzheimer's Family, may be reserved at 471-2555. And Franklin Pierce University introducing their new one-year accelerated MBA that will start in the new Manchester Center this May. Information at franklinpierce.edu. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Canoy. Today in The Exchange, a look back at Governor Hassan's first year in office ahead of her State of the State address this afternoon. One area where the governor pushed hard but did not get her way was for an increase in the cigarette tax. She also pushed for Medicaid expansion. Here she is talking about the cigarette tax in her budget address last year.
Cigarette taxes nationwide have proven to be one of the most effective ways to prevent youth smoking. And my budget proposes reversing the cigarette tax cut and increasing the tax by an additional 20 cents, which will still keep our cigarette tax below those of our surrounding states.
This hour in the Exchange, again, we're looking back at Governor Hassan's first year in office. You can join us for her State of the State address at 2 p.m. today. Join us now with your thoughts at 1-800-892-6477. And Zandra Rice Hawkins, so the cigarette tax is one area where, again, Governor Hassan really pushed hard, didn't get what she wanted. I wonder, on the perspective of a progressive group like your own, where do you want the governor to have pushed harder? Where do you think she could have done more for causes that you care about?
Well, we're certainly glad that she addressed and did try to push for ending the giveaways to big tobacco. That has bled revenue from the state. And frankly, the O'Brien legislature and the Senate Republicans who were there at that time and who are there now allowed that to happen. That was a cost to our state that we're not going to recover those lost dollars. And unfortunately, that's going to be continue to cost us. I do think, though, that one of the things that when you talk about budgets is we have to keep in mind these are complex documents. The governor started out, as all budgets do, outlining her priorities and her policy areas. And then she had to do the hard work of negotiating both with the House and Senate to get to the final budget. I think the state of New Hampshire is very happy with how that budget turned out. It was a bipartisan compromise. It restored a lot of cuts to funding. She was able to put a freeze on higher education tuition, which was one of her campaign commitments and was one of the things that we heard her address in the state of the state last year. So in terms of areas where we would certainly encourage the governor to continue to work, roads and bridges have been mentioned. There's over 300 red-listed roads and bridges in our state right now, and infrastructure is a critical part of her platform and particularly of her her Innovate platform, but she does have to have help doing these things, and I think we see that with Medicaid expansion. The governor invested a lot of time and energy. Everyone and their brother supports Medicaid expansion in New Hampshire, from advocates, hospitals, families. We heard from business leaders who think it would be a good idea for the state. The state loses millions of dollars because we're not taking these federal funds that could provide health care coverage to 50,000 Granite Staters. And we're glad that she's used some of her political capital to push for that. It's important that we talk about these issues and move forward. But you can't do it alone, and that's why we have the system that we have. And so when Senate Republicans have kind of delayed these conversations or made it harder for us to move forward on some of these key priorities, we have to take that into account. And I think that's why you see that there is strong support for the governor and the path she's taken so far.
Can I ask you two quick follow-up questions on that? And then, Drew, a question for you and you too, Dean. In terms of transportation funding, Dean mentioned earlier it's kind of difficult to pin the governor down on what she wants to do. She says we need more money for transportation, but she won't go out on a limb and say we need a gas tax or we need to, you know, do whatever, increase road tolls. I know that that's complicated. Do you wish that she would just come out and say, look, folks, we need a higher gas tax?
I don't think so. I think that it is important for leaders to articulate their plans, but this is one of those issue areas where there's not a lot of consensus right now about what needs to happen. And we saw the conversations of the State House last year get stymied. There's a bill in this year that Senate leadership has already said they're not going to move forward with. So I think that this is something that she's very aware of, but she is coming up with plans, and she's not going to lay all of her cards on the table until she gets a plan that she knows she can get support for.
And Medicaid has been a difficult issue, as we've talked about before. Drew Klein mentioned, Zandra, that some Republican senators were upset with Governor Hassan when she went to their districts and kind of pushed for Medicaid. They felt like they were being, I don't want to say bullied, but they didn't appreciate being called out in their home districts. Was that a miscalculation in your mind?
I think that New Hampshire residents want to see the governor involved in these issues. We saw hundreds of people turn out for hearings at the State House, and frankly, it would have been a disadvantage for her politically if she hadn't stepped up and really shown that she stood with Granite Staters who want to see this program enacted. She had to go out and she had to advocate for it. And I think that's one of the, from our perspective, one of the things that we've appreciated about Governor Hassan. She's not just committed to her policy ideals. She's willing to work for them.
Here's an email that came in from Katie in Durham, who says, listening to this discussion reminds me of all the reasons I dislike this governor. She is annoyingly centrist without John Lynch's charm. Her support of gambling turned me off from day one, but the failure of Medicaid expansion, her stand on marijuana legalization, and lack of a stand on so many key tax issues makes me pray for someone to challenge her in the primary. Do your guests think there will be an alternative in this election? Well, Dean, I think in the primary, she's not going to have a major primary Democratic opponent.
No.
Yeah. What about the other issues that Katie raises? Gambling is a turnoff for some folks. Medicaid didn't go down. Katie said Medicare, but it's Medicaid, Katie, that we're talking about. And again, the marijuana issue. And again, the idea of not being clear on key tax issues.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, there are some echoes of what Katie is articulating in the way in which progressives have been unhappy with President Obama on some issues, you know, didn't push far enough on. They would have preferred a single payer on health care. They're unhappy with some of the national security apparatus, which they see as a continuation of the Bush administration. I mean, it is true that Governor Hassan, and I think Drew referred to this early on in the discussion, she's somewhat modulated in terms of her willingness to take political positions. She may in practice in the legislative process push hard for certain issues, but kind of her sort of general presentation can be a little bit frustrating at times because she is sort of positioning herself. I think she's the politics of all this, electorally speaking, kind of feels natural to her. And so she sort of her natural inclination is to kind of not necessarily split the difference, but to kind of position herself in a way that she's going to appeal to the maximum number of individuals. And in one area where I've sort of been frustrated with her and trying to get her to articulate a clear position is on the issue of energy policy, something we haven't talked about. You know, we get all these things going on in the state right now. You have that proposed wind moratorium. You have Northern Pass. We're waiting on the state legislature to reevaluate the site evaluation procedures. There's a multi-year energy plan. And my sense is the governor has been a little bit reactive on this issue. And, you know, whenever you press her on it, she's kind of, again, modulates like, well, you know, there are business considerations. There are environmental considerations. So sometimes, you know, it may be the case that her natural inclination to sort of refrain from going out on a limb publicly, I think it may help her kind of from a purely political perspective with voters. But, you know, it leads to this kind of disconnect with how she pursues her legislative agenda.
Well, and there we have Katie and others wanting specifics. And yet Governor Lynch was sort of the master at not getting specific. And he was extremely popular and sat in the office for 8 years.
Well, and I mean, that speaks to the fact that it works well from a general kind of public approval perspective. But for people who are activists, who are in, you know, working for their particular agenda, whether it's energy or health care or what have you, it can be very frustrating. But, you know, politicians have to kind of balance working with the activists on an agenda with kind of their general public approval. And that kind of sort of in New Hampshire, that sort of kind of modulated sort of centrist approach to your public persona, you know, works well. It works well for Gene Shaheen. It's worked well for John Lynch, et cetera.
Drew, I'd love your thoughts, and Xander, too.
I just want to real quickly, Xander, did I hear you correctly when you were earlier when you said that you approved of the state budget?
Yeah, I think the budget could have gone farther, but on the whole, having a bipartisan budget is a really positive thing for New Hampshire.
I was just going to list that as one of Governor Hassan's accomplishments of getting Granite State published. Granite State Progress to say that the Senate Republican budget was a good budget because the budget that
Governor
passed.
Governor Hassan.
Governor Hassan, right. Because the budget that passed was the Senate Republican budget. It was $10.7 billion versus Hassan's $11-point-some billion. So there's one accomplishment there. But I wanted to get back to the scholarship issue that we heard a quote from Governor on earlier. And this is another one of those issues that went to her credibility. She opposes this scholarship funding. It's a tax credit if a business gives to a private scholarship that the kids can then use at any school, private school, including religious ones. And she opposes that. But she supports precisely the same scholarship funding mechanism for colleges. So she put it in her budget and it passed. And she's been very vocal in supporting a program for college students in New Hampshire where they get a scholarship And then this one's actually a state-funded scholarship, unlike the tax credits, which doesn't go through the state budget. And kids can use that at religious and private institutions. And, you know, they could go
at the college level.
At the college level. They could go to Notre Dame. She says that's okay, but if you use it at Bishop Brady, it's not okay. I mean, it's a clear contradiction, and there's no way to reconcile that logically. But it's one of those issues where she's taken totally different positions on the exact same issue, and it's taking a bit of a hit on her credibility.
Xandra, I know you want to jump in.
Well, I would say we do support that budget, and we put out a press statement to that effect this summer because we do think it's important that we recognize compromise when there's been good compromise. But I think what's interesting about this conversation and to the caller's question or her criticism of the governor, I think we're hearing both that the governor has gone too far in advocating for her policy priorities and not far enough. And I think that when you take those two things into consideration, that's probably why two-thirds of the state thinks that New Hampshire is headed in the right direction right now. It's on the right track, and why the governor enjoys high approval and favorability ratings. And those ratings are bipartisan. You know, her policies and her agenda has had the support of Republicans, Democrats, and independents in the state because she's been able to strike that balance.
Do you think, Drew, that New Hampshire wants bold governors? We do seem to be, you know, continuing to elect these sort of careful centrist moderates.
No, I think New Hampshire wants careful centrist moderates. I don't think New Hampshire we don't want a Chris Christie-style bombastic governor. Maybe we want that as a president or a senator, but New Hampshire has these institutional constraints on the governor that were longstanding, including the fact that the governor cannot even bring in his or her own cabinet. I mean, you have to accept the appointees. The terms are staggered so that they don't coincide with the governor's term, precisely to weaken the governor. So, and you see it with Lynch and other governors that have high popularity ratings in New Hampshire. They tend to be governors who are nice, who come across as nice and playing well with others. I mean, this is a state where we don't look to executive figures to lead the people. We don't look to them to rally us into one sort of ideological direction in one way or the other. We want them to just govern effectively. And we let the legislature take the lead on what the policies are going to be, what laws are going to be made. But in sort of setting the political agenda in New Hampshire, it's always been the case that the legislature does that.
Now that's interesting. That's different, isn't it?
It's different than in a lot of other states. And I think that's a good thing. And it serves New Hampshire well. But we also have, in this modern political culture of ours, the last century of strong presidents, I think Americans kind of look to executives to be these political leaders, whereas in the 19th century that was not necessarily the case. But we do now. It's sort of ingrained in our culture, and that's trickled down even at the New Hampshire governor level. So even though we like our governors to be sort of centrist and moderate and let the legislature take the lead on things, we at the same time have this ingrained expectation that a chief executive is going to be a bold leader.
The bully pulpit.
Right. And so when you have a governor who has this amazing mix of charisma and leadership abilities like Governor Lynch did, it works. But that's unusual. And I think Hassan is trying to sort of bridge this weird divide of being that centrist moderate who doesn't offend anyone and doesn't take too bold a step out in one direction or the other. But at the same time, she sort of internalized these things where she thinks, okay, there are issues where I have to really whack the Republicans on or really have to take a bold step on. And she's trying to find that balance, and it's not easy to do.
You know, Xandra, Dean mentioned earlier energy issues, and boy, he's right. These are coming up in all sorts of ways, whether it's natural gas pipeline concerns, a proposed wind farm moratorium, Northern Pass concerns. What do you want to hear from this governor, from her administration, about how it's going to approach our energy future? It's a big, big issue.
It is a big issue, and I think that this is actually something where the governor is going to have to work very, very hard with the legislature, because there is a lot of conflicted opinion about the direction for New Hampshire. And we actually don't have an expectation right now for what we'd like to see from her. We would encourage her to continue conversations and to work for bipartisan compromise on whatever it may be. But I think This is one issue area where the landscape's wide open for what direction New Hampshire goes.
What do you especially, Zandra, want to hear from her in this State of the State address coming up at 2 o'clock? And again, you can hear it on NHPR and NHPR.org. What do you want to hear especially, Zandra? What's going to make you feel like, yes, she covered that. Thank you very much.
So the governor has delivered on a lot of the key priorities she laid out last year in her campaign. I really want to hear her articulate that. I want her to talk about restoring funding to higher education and really letting folks know about her record. But looking ahead to this year, the governor's already come out in support of the Paycheck Fairness Act, which is moving through the legislature right now, which would improve and strengthen the guidelines to ensure that there's pay equity for men and women. I'm really hoping she'll come out in support of an increase in the minimum wage, which would be an incredible help to hardworking Americans.
Well, President Obama said in his State of the Union, go ahead, states, don't wait for the federal government. So we'll see if she takes the bait.
Exactly. And I think that it would be nice. We would love to hear some things about infrastructure in her speech today as well.
Drew, what are you going to be listening for?
Some of the same things that Zandra's listening for. I'm listening for some of the small ball stuff. I think what we're going to see from her is do some of these things like minimum wage. I wouldn't be surprised at all if she comes out and says, you know, here's part of my innovate agenda. We're going to go back to early 20th century ideas on wage control. But I think that she's going to take some of these small ball legislative things that she thinks she can get a pretty easy win on. I expect to hear some of those. But I'm really more interested to hear what sort of vision she's going to set for the state. Here's my agenda for this term. Here are the X, Y, and Z things I want to accomplish. She didn't do that in her inaugural address. I mean, it's very, very vague. So I'm interested to see if she stays vague or if she gets more specific.
Dean, how about you?
Looking for some sign that on some of these key issues, she has sort of thought through why she's had difficulty with casinos or why she's had difficulty with Medicaid expansion, and to see if there's some sort of new take on how to get these through the legislature. Also looking for greater clarity on transportation and energy, two issues we've talked about, where I think we're going to need to see a little bit more, sort of a little more coherent set of proposals for how to move forward on those issues.
Okay. Dean, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Sure. My pleasure, Laura.
Dean Spiliota, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. Drew Klein, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Drew Klein, editorial page editor for the Union Leader and New Hampshire Sunday News. And Zandra Rice Hawkins, thank you also for your time.
You're welcome.
Zandra Rice Hawkins, founding executive director of Granite State Progress. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Governor Hassan gives a snow-delayed State of the State address, while UNH President Mark Huddleston delivers his State of the University defending building new facilities. A former top official with the Manchester Catholic Diocese faces prison time for theft, and two dozen athletes with ties to the Granite State head to the Sochi Olympics. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our members, and from Antioch University New England, offering the Certificate in Marriage and Family Therapy Hybrid Program, combining online and campus-based classwork, antiochne.edu. And the City of Claremont, information about Claremont's economic development initiatives and business relocation at claremontnh.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO, Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ, Littleton,
91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
It is 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. Men's testosterone levels are believed to decline as a natural part of aging. Some prescription drugs, as well as environmental and lifestyle factors, might also play a role, but doctors aren't prescribing testosterone drugs at record levels.